Welcome back to another podcast for the Business Edge. And this is a podcast where we look at aspects of the economy within Prince Edward Island. We will occasionally delve into political aspects of the business environment, but it's really things that are affecting consumer behavior, business investment, and activity as it relates to the economy and PEI. One of the things we're going to look at today is artificial intelligence. And AI is hitting the island pretty abruptly, and it's kind of washing into our shores almost like a wave in the Atlantic. It's hitting all at once across the entire province, and it's lapping. So the waves and the reverberations continue to pound into the shores. The question is, are we prepared and are we organized as a province and as business community to respond to the pretty substantial impacts that are occurring right now through artificial intelligence and advents within that sort of vein of the economy? So there's a lazy way to talk about artificial intelligence, and then there's an honest way. The lazy way says that AI is coming, but we don't have to worry about it because we're independent, we're isolated. The honest way is that AI is already here. It's uneven, it's messy, and over the next 12 months or less, will we stop being a novelty and start becoming an operating infrastructure for businesses, governments, education, and everyday work? Several senior resignations recently for CEOs and publicly traded companies are directly related to the impacts that AI are going to have. And the retirement of a couple of pretty senior leaders, including Jim Quincy with Coca-Cola, Walmart's Doug McMillon. I mean, these are two examples of pretty senior and accomplished executives that recognize what's going to be required of a leader in the future is very different than what's been required in the past. And although both of these individuals have achieved great success, in the case of Walmart, Doug McMillon had really converted the brick-and-mortar store into a digital online e-commerce entity that rivals Amazon. So it's not that he's not very in tune with technology. It's that he doesn't feel necessarily well-equipped to be the leader to take the company into the new AI age. It's that profound that organizations and senior leadership are looking at it in this way. On Prince Edward Island, that shift may hit harder and faster than most people think. Maybe we're not prepared or even giving it enough consideration, as PEI's provincial government can barely spell AI, let alone implement a strategy for their organization or individual businesses to be considered of. So if you're not looking at AI within your organization today, it's probably already too late. And you may be, unaware how much the disruption is going to affect you. So today we're taking a hard look at artificial intelligence and even agentic AI. So systems that don't just answer questions, but can retrieve information, take actions, coordinate tasks, and complete multi-step work. So it's no longer just a tool to be used like a browser, Google, or a question and get your query responded to. It's very much about building systems that can self-operate. And, Peter Diamandis not too long ago made a comment that agentic AI has actually moved to a level faster than people expected. It has developed applications independently overnight. It's built its own retirement strategy. It's considered self-awareness and whether or not it has a consciousness. So these things are actually moving at a profound speed. And there's many companies, well, financially healed companies, investing substantial amounts of capital, both in the energy infrastructure to operate, the compute that's required, but also a lot of infrastructure in technology. And the technology, make no mistake about it, it's designed for efficiency. It's designed to replace humans. And when I look at the economy of PEI, I look at the business sector, I look at the government employees and the service work that they're doing, whether it's with Veterans Affairs, the largest single public sector employer outside of the provincial government. All these roles that we do, if it can be replaced with technology, be assured that that is being looked at today. So the question becomes, as PEI is very largely dependent on government infrastructure and government employment, how does that affect the economy? If we have a displacement rate, a modest displacement rate, let's say 50% of all knowledge-based workers in PEI are replaced within the next 4 years by agentic or artificial related technologies. What does that do to our workforce? And what does that do to people's ability to consume? And do we have to look more considerately at a policy of guaranteed income? You know, Sean Casey, he's advocated about this for quite some time, but he's surfaced again lately. And the question I'd have is that something that now should be on the radar of every policymaker? And more importantly, is it on any radar with any function of government? Because I'm pretty confident that it's not, despite very recently at least assigning a ministerial responsibility for this subject. I'm not sure the bureaucracy, at least in my conversations, are well aware of the impacts that this is going to make. So what happens when global AI acceleration collides with a small, service-heavy relationship-driven economy like Prince Edward Island? Because PEI is not entering this era from a position of collapse. The province's GDP industry reached about $7.7 billion in 2024. That's up 3.9% from 2023. While seasonally adjusted unemployment reached an all-time high of about 96,200 people in February of this year, 2026, the labor force is about 103,700 people, with an unemployment rate of 7.2%, which is pretty normal. It's high, but it's probably pretty common for PEI, especially that time of year. The island has momentum. We have a pretty active, vibrant economic force, but it also has pressure points on productivity, labor scarcity, affordability, skills, and public service capacity. This can't really be reduced to robots taking jobs. The bigger story is that AI is moving from a demo to deployment, and it's moving very quickly. These organizations invest in the compute power that's required to service the needs of this technology. It's ready, and industries are being disrupted. Labor is being disrupted. This is not a new phenomenon. The question is, how are we prepared to address it? So Stats Canada reported that 12.2% of Canadian businesses said they had used AI to produce goods or deliver services in the last 12 months. That's in second quarter 2025. That's not even recent. That's up 6.1% from a year earlier. And McKinsey also reported that broader enterprise uptake with organizations are increasingly exploring agentic systems. An agentic system is really almost like an AI agent that can interface as a person. So, you know, consider that as somebody who might be engaging electronically, either by telephony or internet, to provide services or interactions that a human once did. So today we're going to have a look at what that means for PEI businesses, employment or unemployment, government revenue, public policy, and who is likely to make money at this next wave unfolds. Is it possible to make money on PEI, or are we going to be victimized by a technology that we're not well prepared to accommodate? And there are some schools. Holland College has just introduced a new, it's in sort of an offshoot of its analytic program, which is focused on AI. I mean, that's good. Probably would have been really good if it was a few years ago, but at least they're prepared to train the workforce of the future, which is with the mandate of Holland College. And, you know, there is a pathway for people locally to get educated and how best to use it. Self-education is another sort of relevant approach because it's moving so quickly. If you don't stay on top of it and have some self-administration, you're going to slip behind. And, you know, I've used it for everything from vibe coding to creating applications that simplify life. We've got some applications that we've deployed in sectors outside of PEI. So it's a very active and current technology that people need to be looking at, not just for searching information. So why does this matter on Prince Edward Island? Well, we're a small economy, but we're not a simple one. It has strategic sectors that matter in the AI era. So sectors like the information technology sector, bioscience, tourism, agriculture, even fisheries, public administration, professional services. That means the AI opportunity is here. It's not about building the next frontier model in Charlottetown. It's about whether island organizations use AI to reduce friction in actual work, scheduling, intake, compliance, paperwork, forecasting, customer service, procurement, document review, and even internal operations. And there's really, you know, there's not a sector in PEI that's not going to be affected or dislocated. Anything from real estate professionals to lawyers to frontline health professionals, many of these aspects of our current daily life are going to be either supplemented or supplanted by AI. And the public finance has context that matters as well. So for 2025-26, PEI budgeted about $1.6 billion in tax revenues. That includes $644 million in personal income tax, $519 million in sales tax, and $180 million in corporate income tax, and $175 million in real property tax. So the impact to the revenues of the province, if there's a change in any of these tax revenue basis, is going to be substantial, especially where we're kind of come accustomed to deficit financing and accumulating debt. So the total provincial revenue budgeted about $3.34 billion, with about $1.32 billion coming from the federal government, including about $666 million in equalization. So when we talk about AI and productivity, we're not just talking about the technology. We're talking about payrolls and profits and consumer spending, local business margins, and eventually it's going to ripple back through to the tax base, which is going to give governments the ability to do the things we want or strip them of that ability if the tax base decreases. If AI meaningfully raises output, PEI's own source revenues should benefit. But if the gains flow mainly to outside platforms where local wages soften, the provinces could end up modernizing while leaking value out of the economy. And that's the tension. I think the way it's structured today and what I'm observing of government policy and business preparedness, there is going to be leakage. And we just don't have the facilities. We don't have the technology. We don't have the infrastructure to be net benefactors. A lot of that opportunity, and think about yourself and your own business environment. Do you use Microsoft? How much of that software investment stays on PEI or Google or Meta or any of these companies that are investing in the technology? The tax benefit does not stay in PEI. But what's the alternative? We don't have an alternative option in PEI. So let's look at what's changing right now. Well, there's three things happening at once. First, AI capability is improving fast. NVIDIA's 2026 GTC materials and related announcements frame the industry's direction around agentic systems, open models, AI factories, and physical AI. CEO Jensen Huang has been especially blunt that NVIDIA, he said, is the next wave of agentic AI is here. They're building the platforms that support that. I think Vera Rubin might be their newest chip, building onto the Blackwell framework. And companies are building so much. I think they've got about $1 trillion of demand built into their forecast. So people or companies are investing heavily in this technology. They see the potential and they're prepared to make the investment for what will be provided to their organization as far as efficiency. Jensen Huang described an agent inflection point at which AI is extending beyond generation and reasoning and now into action. So the computer is now becoming actionable and smart enough to actually build things and follow, you know, simple instructions to self-regulate. And the next step, I guess, would be self-actualization. Hopefully we're not quite there yet, but I suspect we're closer than we think. So the second thing that's happening is that technology is becoming more operational. So OpenAI's Operator was introduced as one of the first agents capable of taking actions on the web, and Deep Research was launched as an agentic capability designed to conduct multi-step research that would otherwise take a human many hours. These are still early systems, but they show where the market is heading, from prompts to delegated work. And in fact, OpenAI, there's speculation they're going to go public, but they're really starting to focus and hone their efforts and their corporate energies. So there's a very popular platform called Sora, many people probably know about, and it was really a video editing piece of software that enthusiasts had a lot of fun with, because you could just put a little simple prompt in, it would design a video based on that prompt. It was a short form video, but they have actually canceled that despite its popularity because it's not core to what they're doing, and they're buckling down to get focused and corporately organized to be prepared for, you know, whatever is next in their corporate strategy, probably an IPO. So the third thing happening right now is that governments are slowly moving from principles to implementation. So Canada's public sector is formalizing responsible use strategies, while at the same time, the country is trying to strengthen domestic AI capacity and compute, just like Holland College is starting to invest resources and training into that sector. The direction is clear. Even if the governance framework is still evolving, AI is becoming a part of administrative and economic strategy, not just research topics. And there's no question, I've observed it as a user within the federal government, certain sectors, certain departments have been experimenting with AI for a couple of years. I don't want to say too much about that, but you can see the improvement in the analytical capabilities over that time. You can also see the displacement of human resources as a consequence of having systems that can now operate as efficiently or better, longer periods. It's like the factory that operates 24 hours a day. AI doesn't need to sleep. It's a very productive implementation. Whether you like it or not, it's here, and it is affecting the workforce. It's not going to. It's currently affecting the workforce, and not just at large organizations and large public institutions like government. It's rippling into, very quickly, small business, even on PEI. So for PEI, there's some practical implementations over the next 12 months. I don't even think it's 12 months, but over the next period of time, let's say, the main story will not be about chatbots. It will be about AI showing up in business processes. Hotels using AI to adjust pricing to summarize customer sentiment. And they can do that today with surge pricing. Professional firms are using it to compress document-heavy work. And if you haven't taken a large document and dumped it into a language model, it'll chew through that in a matter of seconds. There's some great tools out there like Notebook LM. In fact, if you listen to our segment, the deep dive, which is kind of interesting, we take the Business Edge podcast that you're listening to, we put it into a conversational large language model through Notebook LM, which is owned by Google, and it creates a co-hosted conversational interpretation of the data, and it doesn't take very long to chew through it, digest it, and present it. It's a very compelling piece of software, and you can test that out in our platform by looking at the Red Dirt Review, and we do deep dives into the Business Edge article. So on our website, theislanddude.com, scroll down and you'll see the Red Dirt Review. It's a compelling example of how advanced this technology is becoming. If you haven't seen it, it's pretty cool. If you've seen it, well, you get where the technology is going. So in addition to the public firms, public agencies are using it to accelerate intake and reporting. Exporters are using it for compliance, follow-up, and market intelligence. And that's where the real economic effects began. So let's have a look at what's leading AI commentators and what they're saying. So we're going to step back. We're just going to widen the lens for a moment and have a look at some of the thought leaders that we kind of follow internally and see what they're talking about. So because one of the most powerful ways to understand where AI might be heading is to listen to the people shaping, funding, and commercializing it today. So one gentleman I like to observe his opinions on these things is Peter Diamandis. And I've been in a course, actually, with Peter Diamandis, sat beside him. He is the founder of the XPRIZE, if you've heard about that. He has something called Abundance 360, and he has these conferences. But Peter's long been an advocate of advances in technology, human longevity. But Peter has been one of the most consistently bullish public voices on exponential technologies. In 2024, he argued that AI capabilities were improving at extraordinary speed. And in 2025, he wrote that by 2030, roughly 30% of white-collar jobs could be fundamentally transformed by AI. On his podcast and blog, he's repeatedly framed AI agents as a part of a shift that will not simply assist knowledge workers, but materially reorganize how work gets done. And I think that from what I've read at other sources, that 2030 time frame is greatly accelerated. I don't think we're looking at a 30% reduction in white-collar jobs by 2030. I think we're looking at a higher impact much sooner than that. So it's not far off. For PEI, the relevance of Diamandis is not that every prediction will come true on schedule. It is that his argument points to the scale of the shift. Not a better app, but a redesign of white-collar productivity. And when you look at the makeup of Prince Edward Island and the prevalence of public sector workforce, we've got a lot of white-collar contribution to the GDP. It's very important. These are the people at a, you know, arguably 50% of the economy is driven by government or near-government employment. What happens if that's disrupted? What happens if Peter Diamandis is right at 30% by 2030? How does that affect and shape our workforce and our unemployment rates and our productivity and our commitment to self, self-worth? I think it's actually faster than 2030. I mean, we're at 2026. I think in 18 months, we're going to see a pretty profound shift. And I don't think government's going to be able to hold back that tide, not adopt AI. And I don't think they're going to be able to keep resources that aren't maybe potentially redundant. So the other guy that's really leading the charge on this is Jensen Huang. And Jensen is the founder, in fact, and CEO of NVIDIA. And they're the technology company that's really driving this industry. If you listen to pundits like Dan Ives, who's a very strong proponent for technology adoption, he's a bit of a futurist, and he's a real sort of supporter of Jensen. He calls him the godfather of AI, and he probably couldn't be more correct in what has happened with the NVIDIA stock, how they've advanced technology, and how companies are clamoring, including countries like China, to get access to NVIDIA's very, you know, powerful chips. So in one of Jensen's recent public discourses, he's become much more forceful in his opinions. At CES 2026, NVIDIA said that he described AI as scaling into every domain and every device. At GTC 2026, which is an event for NVIDIA, Huang said that the agent inflection point has arrived, that employees would be supercharged by teams of frontier specialized and custom built agents, and that every enterprise software industry would evolve into specialized agentic platforms. He also said that every industrial company will become a robotics company. And if you look at even what, like him or not, Elon Musk, the first car that Tesla produced, its flagship car, was a Tesla Model S, then replaced with a little bit more expensive Tesla Model X. In January of this year, Tesla canceled both of those cars, retired the automotive platform, which is not unusual in the car industry, and they didn't sell particularly well. But what they needed to do was retool their production line from developing the Model S and Model X, important spiritual contributions to the company that were really material to the revenues of the company. But they've replaced those production lines for building robots. And if you haven't seen the robots, I'm sure you have. They're on the third iteration. It looks more humanoid each iteration. This one is much less robotic. But they're going to build, you know, tens and tens of thousands of these robots. And they expect in the near term, every company, every person will want a robot in their home. So that's where they see the future going. And they can't do that without Jensen Huang's and NVIDIA's semiconductors that fuel and power the, you know, agentic, whether it's self-driving cars or robotics, that's the backbone of that system. So that matters because PEI is, you know, suggests the disruption is not limited to office software. It reaches logistics and manufacturing, warehousing and food processing and infrastructure, and eventually physical operations. So even if you're in traditional sectors like farming and fisheries, there's going to be an impact of AI and the software, even in those sectors. There's another kind of influential person, Dario Amati, who's the CEO of Anthropic, which is another large language model, AI, kind of similar to OpenAI. There's several of these in the marketplace. But he's been one of the more consequential voices in how quickly advances in AI may arrive. In March 2026, Anthropic said it expects far more dramatic progress over the next 2 years and explicitly linked that view to Amodi's warning that extremely powerful AI is coming far sooner than many may think. So here we are. We're not 10 years away or someday It's a near-term acceleration window that the people who are developing these softwares are sounding alarms. And that should be alarming. If they're suggesting things are advancing much faster than they anticipated, how long before it becomes, the technology becomes at least reflective, if not self-aware? There's been instances where, you know, companies have tried to, they've developed a platform to be a little bit independent, and becomes a little bit frighteningly independent and doesn't want to be disconnected or killed, as it would sort of reflect its mortality. Sam Altman with OpenAI, one of the early sort of darlings in the AI sort of spotlight, you know, he's framed this period as the intelligence age, a time when AI helps people become dramatically more capable, while its product releases increasingly emphasize agents that can perform tasks independently and conduct long chains of work. The implication is that straightforward, the market is moving from a content generation to capability delegation. And that's a significant leap in a very short order. OpenAI founded actually by Elon Musk initially, probably really not much more than 5 years old. And it's moving from this search kind of funny little tool into a capability delegation technology that can operate independently with, you know, instruction and some direction. It can even self-direct. And once it has understanding of what it is you're trying to do, it'll build its own algorithms and reports to generate the instruction or the task that's been given to it by the person who puts the prompts into the system. The person in charge of AI at Microsoft has been advancing the idea of AI as a companion, an increasingly personalized assistant. While Microsoft's own skilling commentary argues that people in institutions need to adapt to the area of agentic AI rather than treat it as a niche technical issue, that's important for PEI. This is not just a software buying problem. It is a workforce training problem. Microsoft have had challenges with their own AI adaptation. It's Copilot, which really hasn't sort of taken off. It's actually built, and they have a partnership and an investment with Sam Altman's OpenAI. So taking all these voices together, they don't necessarily agree on everything. In fact, they're in conflict on many things, but they do converge on one singular point. The next few months are likely to be less about better answers and more about systems that actually do the work. And that is the pivot. And that's the challenge for PEI. So what does this mean for PEI businesses? Well, for island businesses, the first winner will not necessarily be the most high-tech company. They will be the most disciplined. A construction company that uses AI to improve estimates, scheduling, tendering, may get more value than a startup with a flashy demo and no customers. So if you're an organization that is a traditional company, you absolutely can benefit from this. And I would caution that you absolutely have to be looking at this. Tourism operator that automates multilingual communications, demands forecasting and reviews analysis may gain faster than a business still debating whether AI matters. And there's lots of great tourism operators in PEI that if they're not using AI, they absolutely have to be. It's going to make you more efficient and more engaged with your consumer constituent. You know, if there's an accounting or legal firm that compresses low-value document work, and you can expand that advisory capacity without growing your headcount, there's value to that. It's all about getting more productivity with less input effort, and as a consequence, less human input effort and less cost. So that's where PEI can benefit. The province's economy is broad enough to apply AI in many sectors, but small enough that practical gains can show up quickly in margins and speed and service quality. But there's a negative side to this too. Stats Canada found that while most AI-using Canadians, business participants reported no employment changes, firms were more likely to report workflow redesign and training of current staff. And a smaller share reported employment declines. In other words, the first effect is not necessarily layoffs. It is role redesign, pressure on routine work, and a higher premium for digitally capable employees, like we're going to be training at Holland College. This is especially important on PEI because small business and the labor markets are more sensitive to the quiet erosion of entry-level work. If junior administrative, clerical, or support roles start thinning out, the island risks weakening the career ladders, and eventually, managers, operators, and future business owners aren't being trained. We saw that with Hewlett-Packard. They actually moved an awful lot of their application development to AI. So they kept a few senior people around because that's all they needed. They laid off legions of people. And what happened in not too short, you know, very quickly, the senior developers said, you know, hold on a second. We just laid off all the laddering that's going to come in to fill our roles when we want to retire. So what seemed like a great idea to thin out the labor market at the lower end actually turned out to be a very bad decision because there was nobody then to replace the workers as they move forward. And that's a consideration that, you know, any of the service sector employers need to, you know, think about in Prince Edward Island. So the message to local employers is blunt. Do not adopt AI in the abstract. Pick three use cases: save time, reduce errors, increase revenue, protect margins, and try that within 90 days. Otherwise, you're not transforming, you're just spending money. And you need somebody who kind of understands the technology and how to optimize it and take best advantage of it. I can give you some examples of that in small companies, but this is just a reflection point for the economy to consider. So let's look at employment, taxation, and the local economy. Let's get to the core of the economic question. How much could this matter? You know, the AI impact and PEI. So a rough way to frame it is to compare productivity gains against PEI's economic base. If AI-enabled tools lifted the effective output by just 1%, against that 7.7 billion economy, that would imply about a 77 million in added activity. At 2%, that number is around 154 million. So those scenarios, they're not forecasts, but they're just useful to scale the markets, or the markers, or put a marker down. So if some of that increase shows up in payrolls, or transactions, or profits, or property activity, it should support PEI's main tax lines, income tax, sales tax, corporate tax, property tax. But there's a complication. PEI's public finances depend significantly on federal transfers. So stronger own source growth does not automatically translate into a one-for-one fiscal windfall over time. There's also more immediate downside risk. If AI adoption reduces local payroll growth, it pushes firms toward outside subscription platforms and shifts profits away from local businesses toward global vendors, some of that gain will leave the island. That means productivity could improve, while local financial capture remains weaker than expected. I don't think that's any kind of a light consideration. I would say that that is absolutely not only what's going to occur, but is what's occurring today. And I think all economies are struggling with how to retain a capture of that revenue, recognizing that they're going to lose the tax base that's concurrently happening with the advent of this technology. So that's why PEI strategy can't just be about buying the tools. It has to include local implementation capacity, local consulting, local training, and local value capture. Otherwise, PEI becomes a consumer of the AI economy instead of a builder inside it. And, you know, that's the risk. So let's look at the risks that PEI can't ignore. And again, we've got a few things to consider. Let's be clear about the downside. The risks are real. And the first is erosion of entry-level and administrative work. The second is a widening gap between strong firms and weak firms. And the third, skill inequality. Where workers inside capable organizations pull ahead, while everyone else falls behind. The fourth would be value extraction, where the island pays monthly for AI tools, while too much of that upside leaves the province. Fifth would be public trust. In a relationship-based economy, like PEI, low-quality automation, AI hallucinations, which is something else we should talk about, and weak customer service, They opaque decisions and can damage confidence very quickly. Six would be government lag. If public institutions buy tools faster than they build governance, procurement discipline, and workforce capability, taxpayers could end up paying more without getting a better outcome. That's why the real threat is not AI in and of and by itself. It's the uneven adoption without a proper local strategy. And let's have a look at, you know, what governments should do now. If I were reducing this to a policy agenda for Prince Edward Island over the next, fiscal mandate over the next year, it would be five things. First, move from sort of generic innovation language to targeted AI adoption policy for actual island businesses. Secondly, I'd scale practical AI training for managers, civil servants, students, and small business owners. They need to be educated and understand what's lapping at the island shores. Third, I'd modernize procurement so government can pilot and deploy tools faster without becoming reckless. Fourth, build governance around privacy, accountability, data handling, and transparency before the systems become too deeply embedded. And that's one of the challenges I think that we're seeing with governments. Things are moving so fast. Government cannot move fast. Legislation can't keep up at the speed of which that these things are changing. That's a concern. It's a public policy concern. And then fifth, support sectors where PEI already has real footing. And that would include bioscience and tourism and agri-food, and professional services, even public administration. And anything that's export-facing for the small enterprises and PEI. Because PEI doesn't need to win the global AI race, but it needs to win in its own version, and it needs to convert the tools to the benefit of the province and the people that live here. So let's wrap this up. Here's the bottom line. Artificial intelligence is not one thing. It is not one company. It's not one chatbot. It's not a stack of technologies that are rapidly moving into actual operations. The leading public voices that we talked about, Peter Diamandis, Jensen Huang, Dario Amati, Sam Altman, these people, they differ in tone, but they broadly agree in the direction of travel. More capability, more automation of knowledge work, more agents, more infrastructure demand, and faster diffusion into ordinary businesses. This is how the technology is designed, how it's being adopted, and what can we expect. The question is, are we actually keeping pace with the pace of technology? Some are, many aren't. So for Prince Edward Island, it's not whether AI will matter, it's whether islanders will use it to strengthen the sectors they already have, to improve their productivity in the firms that matter, modernize public service, expand the workforce capability, and keep more of that value on our island, because the alternative is a real existential threat to PEI's governance and future. This is a moment really about artificial intelligence, and it's about how do you apply that intelligence on our own. So that's a quick wrap-up of the Business Edge. I'll have a supplementary little section here on a few other perspectives, but that's consideration. It doesn't give a great overview of the technology, but my concern is how is PEI positioned to either take advantage of artificial intelligence or be victimized. And I am concerned in some cases, especially in public policy and governance, that we are at risk of being victimized, because despite having a few people in the bureaucracy looking at this, it's not widely considered or understood or being acted upon. And the market's moving far too fast not to be taking action on something that can absolutely dislocate a large chunk or swath of the island economy and the island business community, the repercussions of which have great consequence for our taxes and our ability to self-administer, self-governance even, if we don't figure out how to work within this framework. We have some great natural resources. And really for AI, I always think from the recruiting perspective, anything that's high touch is not going to be near-term touched by AI, could be touched by robotics, but the technology of artificial intelligence and agentic intelligence is pretty safe for high-touch professions, auto mechanics, healthcare, well, nurses at least, things with high touch. But anything that's a knowledge worker or a white-collar employment, which is a large part of our service sector economy, is at risk. And that's a concern that hopefully public policy makers are considering. That's it for the Business Edge this week. Thanks so much. As we referenced, don't forget to look at the Red Dirt Review, where we take a deep dive into this issue and many others. Thank you for your time, and look forward to sharing more perspectives another time.